David, whether you have a few weeks old puppy or a senior who's seen multiple decades, any dog person like me knows the most valuable thing in the world is spending time with your pet.
Yep.
The farmer's dog makes it easy to keep them healthy, which can give you more quality years with your lovely dog.
Yeah, well, I've heard Farmer's Dog makes and delivers fresh, healthy dog food. And, you know, that's what everyone's looking for. It's recommended by vets, nutritionally balanced. It's made from human-grade ingredients, safe, clean kitchens. All that stuff matters.
Yeah. I mean, you love your dog. Why get the lousy food for your dog? Farmer's Dog is the best. Traditional dry and wet dog food options are extremely processed.
Sometimes
they use
dogs...
much lower quality. Yeah.
you put it in their bowl and they go, what is this kibble? And they knock it away. What is this canned goo?
Oh, yeah. I've had our dog, yeah, look at the bowl and then kind of crank its neck up and look at me. And it was like, really?
They go, really? Why don't you go first? You want a bite of this? Slop?
And it makes that sound.
Here you go, dog.
So Farmer's Dog isn't just higher quality food. They also send the food pre-portioned specifically for your dog based on their unique nutritional needs. It makes it easy to help your dog reach and stay at their ideal weight, David, and which is one of the biggest indicators of a full, healthy life. A fresh diet has been found to have all sorts of benefits, David, from healthier coat and skin, better breath, if you want to kiss your dog, and even easier digestion and smaller and better poops.
Let's look at a clip. It doesn't matter if your dog's young or old, it's always the right time to invest in their health for more happy years with your dog. Get 50% off your first box at farmersdog.com/fly.
Let the Farmer's Dog know we sent you. Use your code or click podcast after you sign up for your first box.
And now for a word from our sponsors at Betterment. Let's talk about hustle culture. You know, the whole rise and grind, go big or go home thing. It's a lifestyle that may not be for you, but one that your money can handle thanks to Betterment. Betterment is the automated investing and savings app that makes your money hustle. How? Their automated technology optimizes your investments again and again. With Betterment, your money is taking ice baths at 5 a.m. while you get your well-deserved rest. Your money downs protein smoothies and automatically reinvests your dividends all before you head out the door. Your money's a workaholic, but you don't have to be because you've got Betterment, the automated investing and savings app that makes your money hustle. Visit Betterment.com to get started. Investing involves risk. Performance is not guaranteed. You know, I saw at the Oscars, Dana, was Michael Keaton, and he was in the audience. He presented an award, and he also did a little bit, which I thought was pretty funny.
Oh, that was Batman. Funny. Yeah, I liked Danny DeVito and Arnold, and then Danny DeVito goes, Batman, there he is. And then Keaton did the really straight face, held it the whole time. Someone said he just should have mouthed, I'm Batman.
I'm going to ask him about, was that movie, not the paper? There was the paper, and then there was Spotlight. He's done so many things. What a cool dude. Always in a good movie, always laying low. Mm-hmm. Got a little bit of mystery to him. I think split after Batman pretty quickly. It was funny when they did that bit at the Oscars. I was like, oh, all these guys have been on. Danny DeVito was just on. Schwarzenegger was on. Michael Keaton. Looking forward to it. I see him out here and there rarely. Mm-hmm. Always a gentleman.
He lives in Montana.
He looks like a guy that could have been Costner in Yellowstone.
He's a stand-up, which I'm sure we're going to talk about.
I'm going to ask him.
He played the punchline in San Francisco before he got into movies. So that's very interesting. And he hosted SNL twice. I was there the first one.
Oh, yeah?
Very funny. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, cool.
So
I'm sure he's kicking himself for leaving stand-up and becoming a monster star. I'll ask him. Are you still kicking yourself for not playing fucking Uncle Fucker's Chuckle Hutch in Mississippi?
Yeah, you could have played Sir Laughs-A-Lot in Des Moines for extra show Saturday.
String of Gut Busters in Tuscaloosa.
Billy's Chuckle Hut in Missoula, Montana. You know, add in that fifth show, get the vomit off the floor and bring in the horses.
Funny Bone in Nova Scotia.
There is Funny Bones. The funniest one I actually played was the Rib Tickler. The Rib Tickler in Minneapolis, Minnesota. Welcome to the Rib Tickler. Anyway, we've run out of steam, energy,
and Michael Keaton. Here's Michael Keaton to pick up the pace.
I love a hat that makes no statement.
Absolutely. That's me. Right down the middle. not committed to anything.
Because you don't want to go to an airport and have some funny phrase and funny t-shirt so everyone has an excuse to go, hey, Michael Keaton.
Yeah. Yeah. But I'm looking at Spades. This is my favorite thing. I was hoping there was a Joe Dirt, because I love Joe Dirt. There's a Joe Dirt hat, yeah. But on the other side, there's
there is.
Yeah, but there's also a bottle of Tums.
You fucking asshole.
Whoops. Yeah, he's
not
sensitive.
Supposed to be in frame. Everyone's fired.
Just chug it. Oh, no, those are pills, right?
My set designer's fired. Set deck.
Uh-oh.
No, I'm trying to stay young. What else can I put here that sounds young? There's nothing.
Pepto-Bismol.
Everything's old.
Yeah.
Why am I far away?
Yeah. I'm heavily medicated myself right now, so. I'm feeling real.
So great.
I'm feeling real good.
Yeah. I'll give Michael a compliment. Ready?
Yeah.
Okay,
this
ready?
We
embarrass our guests with compliments.
Oh, yeah.
This might be the only compliment.
I've got a few.
But at the Oscars, a great surprise bit and got a fucking laugh. And really out of the blue.
That was awesome. Can we see the face just on the Zoom?
It was
a very...
Yeah, good one. I would have started laughing because it was out of nowhere. And then do they tell you how far ahead do you know about this stuff and do you ever practice? They just go, this is going to be a thing, play along or don't.
Wow, very good observation. No, I'll tell you what happened. How did this happen? You guys have probably done that or something like it. And it's kind of horrible, really, because it's hard to go up there and, you know, you've got X amount of seconds to make a thing work. And I wanted to do it because I love Catherine. She's a pal. So they go over everything and wisely you rehearse it, actually. It's probably smart. And so when I left the rehearsal, because normally I'd go, no, it's a simple thing and we're going to be up and off. Let's not worry about it. But I was smart enough this time to say, I get it. You know where camera is, blah, blah, blah. So I went down to do it, and on the way home, I got a text from Kimmel or Molly or both, saying his wife, saying, "Hey, would you do this one thing?" And I had planned to do the thing with Catherine, leave, and then go to one of the parties or something. So I thought, "Wow, shoot, okay." And I thought, "All right." And then he told me what the bit was, and I thought, "Oh, that could be kind of funny." And I don't know who that came from, frankly. I don't know if that was something Danny threw out because I saw him there. So anyway, they said, "Would you do it?" And I said, "Sure." So then, this is when show business is truly fun. And I'm sitting there. Oh, boy, this is going to sound so obnoxious because I'm about to name drop my ass off.
Love it.
Yeah.
Love it.
Did you say get it out?
Yeah, purge.
Yeah, purge.
Yeah.
It's funny. I'm sitting there, ready? And I'm talking literally to Al Pacino, and we're bullshitting and blah, blah, blah. And this guy, because they said, you present now at this point, and then about 40 minutes later or whatever, you come back for this segment or.
Right, they pull you early and go, you're on in an hour and a half. Let's get you backstage.
Yes, normally, right. So now. It's like this kid, really great kid, flustered out of his mind, you know, comes over and goes, you got to go. And I go, go where? And he goes, and I go, wait for that thing. We're going to go. And I go, shit. I go, okay, let's now. He says, yes, now we're going to go see you. We're coming out of commercial or something. So I was smart enough to say, I think I brought along. I didn't want to just show up like you just saw me a few minutes ago. So I had this thing tied as an ascot to go full Bruce Wayne kind of thing. So I actually had a wardrobe change. So I said, I'm running in the back. There's a plastic thing and there's confusion. I thought, well, it won't work. Don't worry about it. And all of a sudden, I was like, put it on. And it's so fun because you're walking in and it's panic time. You know, no, get over. Where's the seat? And this poor kid is sweating bullets. And you know, you're among all these movie stars and people, and there's mayhem and stuff, and you're thinking, man, I hope this works. And you're kind of pumped, you know, because you go, that good nervous thing, like, this would be funny if it works, I think.
Yeah.
And then, you know, we discussed, like, what do we do? So anyway, so it was really fun because then you know, you're sitting there, and I knew what I was going to do at that point. So you see the light go off, and I just locked in. But my first idea, I said, hey, what do you think of this? It's just fun to talk to you guys about this. I said, what do you think about this? Is this anything? First of all, they were right. They said, no, we think dead stare. And I went, yeah, probably right. Let's do it. But my first idea was, I wondered, like, they said, you might sit next to Paul Giamatti. And I said, all right, whomever, I'm just going to sit like this. And when they're up there, Danny and Arnold, and they do their thing, I'm just going to be bullshitting to somebody. Like, I'm not even paying attention to the fucking show. They're just talking about shit. And they just kind of look up, just kind of blow them off like this. But I think the dead stare was probably better.
You know, I don't mind a combo where you're talking and they say Batman's here and you go,
yeah,
cool. Like, you just turn straight into him, yeah, and walk in, and yeah, they're like, oh shit. Right. But whatever you did,
everyone's worked in on the joke at that moment. So the fact that you're holding it so straight,
yeah, so long,
like you're too internally laughing yourself, yes, right? It was kind of in your brain, you're going, this is fucking funny.
Yes. It's working.
And the way Danny led into it, they're talking, hey, he's over there.
Yeah.
You know, it was such a great, the way he leaped on that was perfect.
Yeah.
And what you did was perfect. You stole the Oscars. I'm just saying.
No, another favorite part, Michael, is when you're hustling down the stairs, you know, and they're like, 30 seconds. So we come back from the break and they're like, which seat is he? And they go to some seat fill and go, get the fuck out of here. Right. And they're like, that's Cate Blanchett. You're like, oh no, the one next to you. Get out. You
that,
can't
you
ever.
Know what? That was really funny, right? Throw Cate out.
Yeah, get her out of here. We got a bit. But I, you know, those unexpected bits are great. Spielberg giving up, points at himself, gets a huge laugh when she said, I sent my nudes to the
great
wrong person. Yeah. And he points. That got a good one. But those are kind of, I guess they got to be used sparingly because it's hard to beat them. Like those
now,
two.
No, I understand that. You know, when you're there, you can't kind of hear it on monitors, and I didn't really see it. And but I it felt like it was when I glanced up at the screen backstage. I thought, I feel this is pretty good. Mm-hmm. And as I understand it, was actually a really good show. Mm-hmm. You know, I saw bits and pieces later.
Okay.
It was.
Okay.
It
that's
was.
What, you
what
heard?
The,
okay.
Whoever came up with the idea that the five nominees in the audience and then the five winners vet them one at a time, and it was so emotional. That was they had never done that before, right? It was fantastic. Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
You guys would be able to do that. I think Jimmy's great at it. I mean, Crystal was great, man. I mean, but that, as you can imagine, you guys would know better than I actually. That's somewhat thankless. I don't mean to say that like, oh, fuck them, you know, but it is hard. It's really, really, really hard, I would imagine,
yes,
you know, and the pressure is really on in a ridiculous way, you know.
Right. And he's luckily had all the people on his show usually, so they're giving him a break. Joe Coy had a tougher, came in with a deficit at the Golden Globes because they weren't as familiar and they were like, win us over. Like, we're stars. And there's a little of that. I think that's real. I would like to do it sometime. I don't know. I think the nerves would be so overwhelming. And Jimmy's very cool about it.
He's done it four times.
I think that's the exact thing. Yeah.
But I was there when Anthony Hopkins was up for Hannibal Lecter. And then so Billy comes out. He's wheeled out. He's got the Hannibal Lecter mask on. Like, and then Billy would put himself in film montages. And then Billy was a song and dance man at heart. You know, Titanic is going down. It's going down. You know,
it's going down.
Yeah,
Titanic. it's going down.
I'm sinking. And it was just baggy pants, vaudevillian, and irresistibly entertaining. And someone like Jimmy is a monologist, and he's great at it. But that is a little more nerve wracking. It's a high wire act. Here's a joke. Here's a joke. Here's a joke. That's nerve wracking.
You know, Broadway. I can't do it because I don't have the room here, but I used to do that thing like how people in theater or in Broadway. First of all, a lot of Broadway tunes, if you throw the word hey into the front of it, it kind of, it's hey people.
You know? Anything's funnier.
Hey, I'm all right. You're all right tonight. You know,
or even more vague. Hey, Christmas, you're coming around. Oh, are you talking to Christmas?
And then 10 people dress as Christmas trees. We're a tree. You're a tree. I love Broadway. What can I tell you?
And that's the attitude. You both clicked into the attitude. It's like, look out, world. You know, da da da.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, as a kid, I was always thrown out by musicals. I wasn't, because they'd be talking in a movie. And then all of a sudden they'd be going, pass the butter today. We need butter. And I'm 7 years old going, what? You can do this? People just break out into songs?
Right. I remember seeing, I loved Westerns as a kid.
Okay. Favorite one. We're fairly in the same.
Lonely Are the Brave. Probably Kirk Douglas.
Adult or as a kid, well, I remember seeing The Sons of Katie Elder as a kid. And that was like, cool. I saw it in the theater when I was like seven or something. The Sons of Katie Elder.
I would watch the certain couples I just didn't relate to because they were too clean and neat and cute looking. And I remember watching one, and it was interesting because it was the West, but maybe in the 40s or something, which now I love. And a car pulled up. And I went, wait, whoa, hold on a minute. What's a car doing here?
In 1840.
Yeah. I bet you guys were like me when you watched movies or television shows. There were probably, my guess is you're similar. There were probably things that your little head kind of either couldn't wrap itself around or really got excited about that the average kid probably didn't. Do you know what I mean? Like there were certain shows when in grade school, my friends would do, what was that called? Colonel Klink or something that do Klink.
Hogan's Heroes. Schultz. I see nothing. Yeah. I see nothing. Yep. I remember that one.
Shows that I never might, all the kids used to love that I never thought were funny. And I always thought, well, I'm the weird one then. But then the ones me and a couple of your buddies really thought were funny. Mm-hmm. It was like a small group. I'm sure you felt that way, that you had like one or two guys.
Oh, totally. And I had three older brothers. The whole house, my younger sister was just mad for movies. In those days, my sister loved Splendor in the Grass so much, and you couldn't VCR it. So we'd wait a year, and then the whole house belonged to Lori with the Splendor in the Grass with Warren Beatty, and she just did pity. That's a reference reveal. But I'm thinking the one for me that seemed the coolest, I was probably in junior high, was Get Smart.
Me too. That was like, you hit it right on the head. That was my favorite. You know what I think it was? And then there was a thing called, what was that show that I thought was really irreverent? I think it's the irreverent thing that we liked, you know, the making fun of or something, you know. But Get Smart was 100% right there. Yeah.
Well, what about Hogan's Heroes being like, I didn't even understand the theme. I didn't understand how heavy the theme was. And I just thought it was just goofy guys. But when you look at it, you go, wait, what was it about? I didn't know until 5 years ago. I didn't know. I was like, wait, what was it?
I know. Here's a weird one. I never, as a kid, when my friends loved the Three Stooges, I went, well, I would never, I didn't believe it. I go, well, that people, here's how weird I was. I go, I'm not in on that. It's silly. It's not like, I don't get it. You know, I'm like, I guess
I know
so,
where you're going with this.
Yes. Yep. And as I got older, it fucking kills me. Now I look at it and I go, look at these men. Like there's always that scene where, and there was a woman who played the role all the time of the kind of matronly type. And they would say, the scene would be them saying, well, Mrs. Holloway or something, you know, and she'd say, now you three boys behave yourselves while you house sit for my home. Yeah, and watch after my daughters or something like that.
Yeah.
Just to look at these guys, and she played, now listen, fellas, you behave yourselves, you know.
These are the three idiots they hire off of Craigslist, these three guys. And they can't do anything.
Commit manslaughter toward each other. You know, they get a crowbar, bam, you know. Now go over there and shave the ice, you know, and then he has shaving cream on the ice and he's shaving the ice.
That's right. Given orders. Some amazing
shave the ice.
Now work on those rocket ships, you two, you know.
They always come back. The boss comes in 5 minutes later. How's things coming along? Well, what have you done here?
Right.
It's like, you've botched the job.
Right. I love them more now. They're more acid humor now.
Me too.
I was Abbott and Costello then, not so much the Three Stooges, now Three Stooges.
It's so
avant-garde.
I am so with you.
Tired of not being able to get a hold of anyone when you have questions about your credit card? With 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Oh yes, you heard me right. You can talk to an actual human on the Discover customer service team anytime. So the next time you have a question about your credit card, call 1-800-DISCOVER to get the service you deserve. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
But I always did. I did like Abbott Costello, kind of, and I kind of liked I kind of got that. I don't know what the
meets Frankenstein because in the day the monsters were the monsters of the day, you know, Bela Lugosi, yeah. and so that was sort of, yeah, depending on how old you were, a little bit scary. But how funny, because they, in their script, they just go A and B ad libs. I mean, the scripts would come out. I know Bobby Slayton, this comedian, famous comedian, owns one of the original scripts of Abbott Costello Meets Frankenstein, and it's just A and B ad libs. So you could tell when he comes in, what are you scared of? What'd you see? When he sees someone come out of the coffin, and then the straight man comes in. It's such great, it pops, you know?
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, I would love to own one of those. That'd be very cool to have one of those. I was never afraid of scary things. Things that scared kids never scared me. And I know there's no Godzilla, you know. I just know there isn't. I'm such a drag when I think about it, you know. But when I saw my friend, here's a great one. You know, I was raised Catholic and I was an altar boy, and we were very Catholic and everything. And when The Exorcist came out, I have a friend, in fact, I'm gonna see him. And visit him because he's an old pal, and he's a real wise guy, you know. Like, say, you know, he'd make a comment, and he's a poet, actually writes beautiful poetry, but he'd like make fun of shit, you know, and be a wise ass all the time. He told me, so he didn't respect anything, really. He was really, you know, irreverent. He went to see The Exorcist. It gets to the point where, I don't know, at some point he gets up and leaves and goes right next door to a bar and like starts drinking whiskey. He was so frightened. It just scared the fuck out of him.
There's not a chance.
Scared the fuck out of me because I didn't even, my friends, high school buddies. Oh, let's go in. It's called The Exorcist or Exorcist, whatever. We come in late. We're in the third row. We don't even know what it is. And it scared the fuck out of me.
Oh my God.
And then I went home. My parents were in Montana. No one was around. I'm staying in this track home. I go in the door, and we had this little dog, and it's at the top of the stairs, and it's pitch black, and it's going, rah. I mean,
the dog's the devil. My brother
saw it. Yeah, the dog was a devil.
My brother saw it, and I was shitting bricks just hearing it in secondhand, and I've still never seen it. It was too scary.
I'm with you. Yeah.
People wish they hadn't. People don't go, I wish it's not in my head. There's some things you just don't want rattling around in there. And when they go, it's based on a real story, then I'm out. I don't, though this can happen. Nope, 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 nope.
Okay, let's move to like coolest guy.
No, wait, I have a question about the Oscars movies. Dana. I have one last about Oscars.
That's right. We got to get back to the guy who stole the show.
Yeah. Okay, ready? Listen to this, Michael.
Yeah.
My advice to you, so you're at the Oscars. So what you probably do is you're there next to like, you know, Margot Robbie or something. And then when they hand the Oscar to someone, you just casually go, oof, those are heavy. And then that denotes that you have won it, you know. It's just a thing I would do.
Yeah, that's really smart. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like just a sort of low thing like, yeah.
Yeah, heavier than you think. You got to use your traps a little bit and some lats. And then was there anyone there? Oh, wait.
I want to ask a question.
Yeah, go ahead.
Was there anyone backstage who saw this guy and you just, for some reason, it popped in your head, I'd like to fucking smash that guy in the face? It's just a random thought. You wouldn't act on it, but like, that guy has a punchable face.
No, I'm... several. No, nobody.
Yeah.
Nobody.
Was Catherine there O'Hara, by the way.
Oh, I love Catherine O'Hara. Go ahead,
Dave. I just want to compliment loving her so much as a performer and a person. And I ran into her at this J.J. Abrams event. I barely get out of the house, but I was there. And we're just kidding around. I said, who makes a move in their 60s? I mean, really, this is a few years back. Who makes a move in their 60s? Nobody makes a move in their 60s in show business. And she says, Marty. And then Marty does the thing with Steve Martin. But that she was the one making the move with the half-hour show. What was it called? Schitt's Creek.
Oh, yeah.
She went,
well, yeah. I've loved her forever, and she's kind of a pal, you know, but not kind of a pal. She's a friend of mine. So,
well, if you meet her for 3 minutes, you want to be her best friend. I mean,
it's like, exactly. And she's nicest girl, best girl. You know, we have a big family too. And we had, you know, we're similar. You know, my mom's Irish, not from Ireland, but so we had a big, you know, that whole thing in our background. But her family, I remember meeting them years ago, and she's just so great. I did this little movie, and I asked if she'd play my wife in this little movie Griffin Dunn and Amy Robinson, his producing partner, had this little deal for a while where they were doing really small independent movies. And there was a Don DeLillo book called Game Six. And I did it with them, shot it for, nothing. I think, honestly, I'm not kidding. I think it might've been like 600 grand or something like that. And so besides Beetlejuice, I got her to play my wife in this movie. She's great. Yeah. And that's one reason I wanted to present when it was with her, you know.
Perfect.
Oh, everyone knew, that are Beetlejuice fans, like, there they are. And we all know the movie's coming out in September. So that's one thing about you. Like, I know you did the Flash. You got in the Batman outfit 30 years later, and it fit. So I'd like to know why and how do you manage your weight? Are you on Ozempic? What is, like, you could play... You're the same size person. You're pretty fit. So you played Batman 30 years apart.
Yeah, I did. I was kind of half brag. I was kind of bragging about it, really, but I was making a joke out of it. Like, but I was pretty proud of myself because I thought there's no way this is going to work. Fit right back in. I thought, wow, I'm a dude, look at me. But you know what I've learned, like a dope on the first one, I thought I better get fit for this thing. Cause we didn't know if the whole idea of the suit, that was a lot. That really was the day before my shot in that suit. It hadn't been ready. It wasn't ready yet. So I didn't know I saw images, never knew but how is this actually physically going to work? Right.
Can you move?
I thought, I'm being real actory and everything. And I thought I better be fit for this thing. Never thinking, what's the point? I was working on a bag and Nicholson walks by me and he goes, "What are you doing?" And I go, sweating, being real groovy, working out, something like that. He goes, "What are you doing that for?" And he just walked out the door.
There's no reason to work out because you're not going tits up. The suit stays on. That was later with Christian Bale was shirtless and did 50 push-ups.
No scene that I can recall like that where I'm shirtless or something. But also what I've learned, how stupid I was, it's actually easier to... there's more room to move inside if you're smaller.
Yeah.
So what's the point? I've told the story, but you guys will find this funny. We didn't know if the thing would work, and then it was a whole thing. Geez, how do you light it? And how do you even move in it? Blah, blah, blah. I'm not going to bore you without all that. But there was one of the first shots here. We're still putting this thing together and go, okay, wait, can you even move? And I can move, but I can't sit or whatever. There's a shot where I'm trying to act real cool, and I turn like this. This whole motion started with, I'm supposed to turn. Something happens. Some bad guy comes down or something. I don't remember. It's long shot. I turn to look at him. Mm-hmm. Lights real cool. And as I turn, I turn this way. And this thing, part of the suit goes, just goes like, whoop, and the suit like opened up.
So it's open. Off your face. Yeah. You can see.
Yeah. Because we hadn't figured out how to make it, how to get that whole thing yet. We're all constantly pasting and sticking it. So that's where all that stuff came from. I thought, it's really easier to go like this and the thing won't pop like that.
Yeah. It's on you so tight. Yeah.
A specific mouth that you would do, right? When the first Batman came out, just sort of the way you made your mouth when you were in the suit.
Way more credit. I deserve. I just gotta put her on.
This is what I would go with, and it'd scare them a little bit. They'd be like, "Is what is that, Captain Curious?" I'm like, "This. You can't see it on Zoom, and it's so good."
Captain Curious.
What made you guys say instead of doing like either of you could just do your own, but you said, "No, we should probably." Double up here and do this, which for me is a good idea, but I don't know anything about this.
I would say known Dana since right before SNL, was a big fan of his, and got on SNL where I was pretty much his understudy, and then and we can't really compete with Dana out there, but Dana did a great job. I left, I'd see him here and there, and then I started seeing him more because he lived close by the last couple of years. And we talked a lot about stuff, and we'd always talk about SNL and just whatever. And I kind of wanted to do one of these. And then I thought I wanted to team up with someone that's funny that can share. And then also he has his own people that love him and just sort of a wider net. And then it's more fun and it's easier to talking. Dana's a smart dude.
Such a good idea. It's so smart. That's interesting. You were not. What do you mean, an understudy?
Well, Dana was doing so well, but he might not have been there forever. You know, you have your shelf life, and then Lauren, I sort of looked like him, and just coincidentally was a little like him, and then, but I wasn't like a big impressionist. And then Lauren, I think, to Dana was playing a little like, we got this guy right here.
Oh, Lauren would say, because David would sit behind me and read through, you know, and I look over and Lauren, David's always on deck. He'll always be ready. If anything happens, if maybe not going to do it, if that catchphrase starts to fade away,
we own it.
David will be right there. And by the way, he has tried on the church lady dress, and it fits like a fucking glove. Michael Keaton is here. It's you as a host. In the Monday meeting, Michael Keaton is here. He's our favorite freaky dude. But also, we have the same manager, David and I, about getting put together. And then podcasts became all the thing. First, they were just sort of fun.
I don't even have a manager.
And then there was like, you don't have a manager?
You've been paying him for 22 years, Mike.
My dad works in B2B marketing, but I never really knew what that meant. Then one day, my dad came by my school for career day and told everyone in my class he was a big ROAS man. Then he just kept saying things like, the bigger the ROAS, the better, over and over. My friends still laugh at me to this day. I think it means calculating a return on ad spend. One thing's for sure, I'll be known as the ROAS man's kid for the rest of my days. Why couldn't you just be a fireman or a lawyer? Why? You ruined my life, Dad.
Not everyone gets B2B, but LinkedIn has the people who do. And with ads on LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people based on job title, industry, likelihood to buy, and more. Start converting your B2B audience into high-quality leads today. We'll even give you a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/wall to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/wall. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
Looking to save on delivery? DashPass from DoorDash is your door to $0 delivery fees and savings you can't get anywhere else. DashPass is an exclusive membership with DoorDash that gets you unlimited $0 delivery fees on eligible orders and members-only deals and discounts. Whether it's food from your favorite restaurants, grocery from across town, or anything in between, DashPass is the most affordable way to get everything you need delivered right to your door. With $0 delivery fees and lower service fees on eligible orders, DashPass makes it easy to save at restaurants, grocery stores, and all your local favorites on DoorDash. DashPass pays for itself in 2 orders on average. Plus, DashPass gives you special access to exclusive promotions and menu items, all for $9.99 a month. Get more from delivery for less with DashPass. $0 delivery fees and reduced service fees on eligible DoorDash orders. Sign up for DashPass today and get your first 30 days free if you're a new member. Subject to change. Terms apply. Now, we should talk about a little project at some point. Your Knox goes away.
Yeah, I directed this movie. It's good. But mostly what's good about it is the cast is pretty damn good. That's with Pacino and James Harden, Marcia Gay Harden. It's just really Susie Nakamura. You know, I wanted somebody funny in there. She's real funny.
James Marsden.
James Marsden. Mm-hmm.
James Marsden's from Jury. I just saw him in Jury Duty, right?
Is that yeah. Him? Yeah.
So, yeah, we should talk about that show, the show. So, this movie. So, like that. You know, I directed before, and this was something I wanted to do, but it was not like I must tell the story. I've been dreaming of this story for years. It was a script that came that was really well written. Kind of sat around the house for a while. You know, I was offered it as an actor and then went off and did something, came back, picked it up, did something else, came back. And I didn't think anyone was really interested before and then anymore. And they would call me and say, hey, what do you think of this? The writer would like to know finally. And I don't blame the guy. And I said, yeah, let me read it one more time. I think this is pretty good. And then I said, you know, the only way I want to do this is if I can direct it too. So we started doing it. You know how it works. There was like 24 or 5 days to shoot it. I got this really good cast together and it's pretty good.
Oh, it's cool. I saw the trailer. It's very cool. It's very interesting. I did not know you directed it. Can you hear that? I did not know you directed it. And now it's even more props to you, because right away, it's a very interesting story. Could you tell a little bit about it, just so people know?
I'm not good at this. Here's the setup. Contract killer.
I'll tell you where you're right and wrong.
Thank you.
we'll fill in the blanks. Yeah. I could say it really fast. Please. I think it has an incredible hook. If you could call it a hook.
And
but
if you guys could travel with me while I sell this thing and just pitch in. This guy is a contract killer, hitman if you want, but it's not really a hitman movie at all, actually. So he's got this form of dementia called Creutzfeldt-Jakob, which is also a good name for a comedy team, now that I hear Mike. Mm-hmm.
Or a forward in the NBA.
That's right. Another Eastern European.
From Lithuania, Krzysztof Rotrup.
Another Eastern European. And it's an actual disease, and it goes fast. Once you're diagnosed, there's not much time. And James Marsden plays my kid, and out of the blue, I get this news that I've got it. So he had the ticking clock thing, and out of nowhere, it's a great shot, by the way, I'm very proud of it. I hear something at the door. I start to slowly walk out the door. A really beautiful shot comes down, and the door swings open, and you see Marsden there, who is unbelievably good in this movie. Like, his hands wrapped, sweating bullets, emotional, kind of crying. And I go, who the fuck is this guy? And it turns out he's my son. And so he comes back to, he's in big trouble. And so it's this thing of me trying to pull this deal off. I'm speaking in a way where I don't too much of it, trying to pull this deal off. With Marsden's character in before I'm totally gone. So I progressively get worse as I try to basically get him out of a jam, to put it mildly. And Marsden, I keep saying this, and I need to stop saying it. I go, wait till people see James Marsden in this. They're gonna be knocked out. Truth is, I don't think actors will be. I think people will go, yeah, I knew the guy could do it. I've seen a lot of his stuff, you know, and it's harder for some of those handsome boys, you know, to break through that thing. And
I know.
Dead to Me. Well, he was so brilliant in Dead to Me, you know, amazing. And I think that what I love about this, and it must have been interesting, a challenge for you, is you take a guy who's a hitman, and he's a badass. He's got his wits. It's kind of, that's the way I see it. And then slowly but surely, it's like Superman having a little bit of kryptonite in his spandex. Slowly but surely, he's losing his superpower. And so, and there's a race against time. Is that kind of the engine of it? And you had to play this little more demented.
Shot everything out of order, especially when you only have 24 days. No luxury to say, well, we need to shoot in order. So I was always checking. Here's what I wouldn't do again. I actually like directing myself. I've done it twice now, and three times when I did the Letterman thing, the Letterman Film Festival, which you guys I'm sure have seen. But you save a lot of time. But the problem, I wouldn't do this again. I wouldn't play the lead this hard, this complex, where you go, wait, where am I now? What am I doing now? When? Mm-hmm. How bad off am I? You know, it's like when I did Multiplicity. That was, well, that's a show in and of itself we should do, because making that was insane and so much fun. But, well, you'll appreciate this. Sorry to go off. I really should be selling this movie better.
Five characters. Ten?
And I didn't want to do the fat suit thing or the change the makeup thing. Like, wow, you know, now he's got a big nose. I wanted to do, well, if he's just off a little, you know, except for the one guy who goes totally off. And I totally stole from Jerry Lewis on that. But if you go off a little, he's just off a little bit. But how we would do it, you're the perfect two people to talk to about this. There'd be a ping pong ball and a night on a light stand or something. And you're mm-hmm. off it. And then we hired a couple of these younger actors who were great. If I needed something to bounce off of, but while I was doing it, you know, if I was like, let's say I was playing three, who was the real sensitive guy, I'd think of an idea, knowing I'm going to be around the other side talking to one of my other guys. And I go, oh, so I'd have to set myself up ahead of time.
Just so in the script, to react on the other side.
Yeah. So you're thinking, and then you go, wait, we might not shoot that for a week. You know what I mean? Mm. So I'm going, whoa, man, I got to remember that thing. You know, how did I do that? Or I'd make a note or something. Did you guys work? Are you a writer downer? Like Chris Rock is so unbelievably organized. His work ethic is so good, I think, from what I know of him. But I was listening to Bill Burr talk the other day. He says, nah, I don't do that at all. I just kind of, I see something. I don't really go over it in my head. I don't want to write it. I know it. I get up on stage and I just start doing it.
No, not me. Yeah, I write down a lot and I have to remember inflections. And now I'm gotten to the point where I audio record it because of inflections and a different way to deliver it so I can remember. And Dana?
For me personally, I think that the style I like to do was really best in small clubs. And the club that made me was San Francisco in the Haight-Ashbury, the other cafe. Because you're playing honky-tonk bars and the blender's going, show us your dick, you know, that kind of stuff. But for me, a small room where I'm coming onto this stuff is the most exhilarating. I get the redundancy of stand-up word for word gets really hard for me. So I try to deconstruct it. I try to make myself laugh. I try to surprise myself. But if it is like 2,000 or 3,000 people, I lose a lot. So if I did another stand-up special, I'd want to do it in a really small room, 30 seats, 40 seats. That'd be the best. Yeah.
Truly. Wow.
I remember when you were headlining the Punchline. They said this guy, Markle Clotten, they never got your name. Markle Clotten is playing the Punchline. Markle Clotten? What? Who's he? You know. But you were a really great stand-up. I mean, you were a headliner. And
well, not as good as you guys, because people don't know how hard it is to get to where you guys are, to get that good, how much work there is, and how difficult it is. No one really appreciates it. I was on a movie once long time ago, and this guy goes to, we're talking about stand-up or something. And he's an actor, not a famous actor, just some guy playing and he's talking. And I'll never forget this. He said it like this. He said, huh? He said, yeah, I never did stand up. I didn't say anything, but I thought, dude, you have no fucking idea how hard it is to get to the level. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, I probably could have done it if I wanted, you know.
They don't understand because they're funny at the Christmas party.
Yeah.
And then they don't know that it'd be funny on demand when you have a migraine and you just bit your tongue. And you're so bored and you're tired. And then you got to go out and dismantle the room. That takes a long time.
Dismantle.
And you remember when there were like 11 stand-ups? You know? Now there's 11 in my house somewhere.
Well, you influencers go out, you know, young women or men, and they do the 2 minutes. They put it on YouTube, and then they try to put them at the Chuckle Hut in Fresno, you know, and they're going to do an hour, and it doesn't work.
Like people now in comedy, don't you think? And really good stand-ups, like really, really a lot. You would think that couldn't happen, you know, just the numbers wouldn't work, you know, but there are, there really are.
People are getting good at it.
Yeah.
Michael, is this, I think I've asked you this just out in the world, but was one of your jokes... What if it's bad and I say it's you? But I like it where you say, I landed in Minnesota and it was 3 degrees. I was like, why be any?
I actually landed somewhere today. It was 1 degree. One. I said, why have any?
I say that so much. I try to attribute it to you. Sometimes it slips my mind. But overall.
Oh, wait a minute. I had a joke like that. Or it wasn't near as good. But how did people reminisce in the year 2? God, remember early one?
Right.
Let's go back to those days.
Yeah.
Kind of joke.
I was shitty at jokes though. I never really told jokes really well.
You were a rhythm actor guy. You know, you did that, you did the gangster guy, which Lovett said it was you later on, but whatever. But I know that you did that kind of that's the guy, that's the ticket, right? You did characters, attitudes.
Well, 30's lying. I remember writing and go 30 in old movies, got a guy's lie. Poor guy. Everybody was beaten up over that. I thought, please let this man off the hook. The thing he does is probably his own thing. I have no idea. Anyway, I should be probably selling my movie more. I'm sorry I'm bad at this, but it's really good. I hope everybody goes. I'd love talking to you guys about this stuff.
Well, by the way, selling it, I think you've sold this hook, because when I saw the trailer, I don't want to know anything else. I'm just like, I'm already in. Like, I don't want to know all the tricks, because you'll start to figure it out maybe. But also, I ran into Mila Kunis two nights ago. Are you doing something with Mila?
It's actually a comedy. It's not hard comedy. She's a really nice girl, woman. Yeah, Hallie Myers, who's Nancy Myers' daughter, wrote it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and it's this really nice little movie. It's softish, you know, very kind of emotional, but sweet. And it's really good. This woman, Hallie, so interesting. She's really smart, and she so loves comedy, and she's very old school. She loves old classic movies, and she's young. I mean, she's in her 30s, I think. And here's what's really funny. I was actually talking with Marty Short. I was at her mom's party once. I don't go to a lot of parties, but I was at her mom's party once right up the road here one time. And this, she said, come here, I want you to meet my daughter. And she was like a teenager. And so she, you know, this kid was like 14, 15 years old at the time. And she was a massive fan. Like, she knew everything I did. And she was shy and everything. And she said, no, she said, this girl's like your number one fan. She was like a little kid. And then she ended up directing, which is kind of cool.
And then you get to be in something with, and Nancy, who was one of the best ever.
Of that genre, did she do, what was the Diane Keaton movie with Sam Shepard? She goes out in the country. Sorry. Do we have a winner? But I think it was a Nancy Myers. She makes pretty movies that were just so irresistible.
Yeah. Oh, so many.
Mama, baby, something. I can't. My wife's not here. Anyway, here's a question I have for you. It might be a non sequitur. How much, if they could do a movie with AI where they would make a virtual you, but you didn't have to be in it, how much would they have to pay you for you to give them permission?
A whole lot. And you know what?
A whole lot.
A guy I know who was way ahead of this years ago. In fact, another friend of mine, I'm going to see him here in a couple of days. Hit me to this so long ago, said, here's what's going to happen. And he totally called it. And this was like, I'm telling you, he said this to me 20, I'll bet you 20 years or more.
Wow.
So scale plus 10. True Green is the easiest and most affordable way to get a beautiful lawn. Now, you're out there, you have acres and acres, hundreds of acres. All you have to do is water and mow, and they'll do the rest. No. Weed control, which you hate, fertilization, aeration.
Can't stand it.
Among others. They'll do all that, so you can do literally anything else. Dana's out there like Yellowstone. You have better things to do in your free time. I know you do. You don't want to focus on lawn care.
True Green is too good to be true, is what I'm saying. But it is true. Right, David? Because you're going to have more time to do things that you want to focus on.
All the hard work, and it gets you to a great lawn. That's what you want. You take care of everything else you got to do in your life. You're very busy. Let True Green take care of this one thing. Get it off your plate.
You know what? I do have some space. I want to put some grass down. I might. I'll call you later, True Green.
Talk to True Green. Where can listeners purchase or learn more? You go to TrueGreen.com. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people, guaranteed.
You can trust True Green to give you the best lawn because they are the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour.
Whoa.
They offer a satisfaction guaranteed, and they have a verified best price promise, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. That is such a cool thing.
Good job, True Green. You're nailing it.
Now your ideas don't have to wait. Now they have everything they need to come to life. Dell Technologies and Intel are creating technology that loves ideas.
Loves expanding your business, evolving your passions. We push what technology can do, so great ideas can happen right now. Find out how to bring your ideas to life at Dell.com/welcome to now. I had another thing for Michael. I know we're grating his nerves, but it's almost over. When I just rewatched, actually just asked Adam about the Farley bit,
the
where you beat the shit out of him.
So grandma and a boy, whatever, you and Chris and Adam, and yeah, the dress rehearsal is on YouTube, which is next level. But also the way you beat the shit out of Farley and the way Farley would throw his body around, that sketch, watch it this morning. It is irresistibly funny. And talk about Three Stooges. You are just, you're grabbing his nose at one point. Was that your idea?
Like, yeah, that's one of my favorite things I ever did. You know, I've never been good on that show particularly. There are a couple shots here and there, but I was never really very good on it, really. I don't think. But that was so, so fun. And that that group of you guys was really fun, nice welcoming group of guys. But I would tell you this, not to be get that Spade. Well, first of all, you guys make me so fucking happy when I watch you. You make me laugh so hard. I thought, how great is it that I get to hang out and talk to these guys? Because I don't see you in life that often. I run into Spade down there. And all you guys have done, I mean, honestly, Dana, you make me laugh so fucking hard. It's crazy. And Spade, you did something one time. You know, everybody goes through some up and down stuff, right? And I was in a not a great spot, right? One, two, one, bro, you know, up and a happy guy there for a minute. And my wonderful older sister who passed away came out. She was hanging out with me because she was feeling bad for me. And she said, let's go to the movies. She talked me into going to the movies. I said, I don't know. I wasn't moping. You know, I'm not a moper. I was like, let's go. Yeah, I just go, you know, it's kind of like keeping it all into my unhealthy self. and I said, all right, let's go see fucking Tommy Boy. Man, it's hard to get funnier than that. Right?
Don't you think? Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean,
I think it's, I think in its own world, it's a perfect movie.
And I thought, man, how lucky am I? So that picking up for about an hour. After that, I was pretty much back down.
Well, when you have a 40-year career, I don't know when your first movie, like 81, 82. Ron Howard, by the way, what's the deal with that guy? I mean, come on.
No. Such an asshole.
The Dalai Lama decided to be a director. That's the way I describe Ron Howard's vibe. But when you have a 45-year career, you have to have some dips. Even Jimmy Stewart and Henry Fonda did sitcoms in the early 70s.
I just wasn't a bad – I wasn't career-wise. I don't really think
of it's just
things.
A bad mental place.
Yeah,
Dana.
Oh. Yeah. I don't think of the, I was never like a career guy, you know, except that I'm a shitty card player and I'm a – I mean, horrible. Like, I don't even know how to play. I don't know how to gamble, really. I can play blackjack because that's not too hard to understand. But I'm horrible. But with me – like taking risks and stuff, never even thought about it. Don't even think about it. I go, yeah, I'll take a shot.
Never look back.
Stupid, basically, you know, but I always gambled on myself. So I never looked at like, oh boy, this is not, I mean, I'm nuts. I look at something and hope it really does well. Or sometimes you do it because you go, I could financially really do well here if this does well. Or I haven't, but mostly it was about, wow, I never did that. Or I wonder if I could do that. Or that's pretty interesting. You know, I really miss doing a comedy. That I miss a lot, but it's just hard to find one that's that's really funny, you know?
Well, I think that people from afar feel that about you. Like, you're not like a celebrity, you know? And that's different than being a great, funny, dramatic actor with a career. There's no sense, you know? And when I'm looking at your Wikipedia page, you go, oh, that movie.
Yeah.
Oh, and then you did that, and then you've got Dope Sick, and you're doing get the Emmy for that, and it's been remarkably consistent now that you see it, and varied. But I want to ask you this one question. There is, in my mind, what I call a sleeper movie. It's not necessarily a blockbuster. A sleeper movie is when your friends are coming over, relatives, and you go, let's put on a movie. Have you ever seen this movie? And you know they're going to like it. And you have a sleeper movie. Every time I've said to someone, oh, we're looking for something to watch tonight, you know, and it's an easy movie to watch, I go, watch The Founder. You knew it?
You knew he was going to say it.
Every time they go, oh, my God, The Founder. And even recently, in the last few months, thank you. It's so good. You get to learn all about McDonald's. It's a true story.
I'm going to watch
it. And you are, I assume you would feel it, like, just so in the pocket. You're like the guy, and that the fact they got you to play Ray Kroc, it's the kind of thing where you go, nah, no one else could have played it as good as Keaton in that particular part. And I say the same thing to Owen Wilson. his sleeper movie, but maybe it's a little more high profile, is Midnight in Paris, especially with women. I mean, if you have not seen Midnight in Paris, watch that movie. But The Founder is yours.
Yeah, I really like that movie. Proud of it. And you know, that was Harvey Weinstein totally burying it because he was caught up in this before he was exposed and all that, but he kind of downplayed it. And people were screaming at him, angry, you know, some of the executives, he wasn't pushing it enough. And I remember everybody getting excited about it. I said, let me tell you, you can say it to his face because Billy Bob Thornton did this. Billy Bob Thornton once directly said to him, called him every name right to his face, you pig, you liar, you thing, you're this. And I said, you can say anything you want to this guy. Trust me when I tell you. There's no, he'll just look at you and go, hey, want to grab some lunch? He could not care less. I swear to you. So I said, he ain't going to do anything if he doesn't want to do it. I never cared for him personally, but I said, don't get excited about it. He's, you know, this is it.
Whatever happened to that guy, Harvey Weinstein? Whatever happened?
He's got a little, he's got a deli, I think.
You know, Michael, I would never compare careers, but I've done movies and the sort of Dana put it in a nice way because it's a great movie. But when people say one's about me, they go, you know, the one I actually liked. And then I go, no. That you can stop there. I don't want
to. Yeah, no, I don't want to. Like some guy came up to me. One guy once said to me, hey, I'm really enthusiastic with you. Hey, I really like some of your movies.
That's pretty good.
What are they?
Actually. You shouldn't take that. I'll take it. Yeah, and I appreciate you saying that about Tommy Boy because like you in that sketch that you did and you on the show, I think you did one called Darty Eyes too, maybe. But when you get that close to the Farley and in the pocket like that, it's just so fucking fun. It was just a gift. And you got to do it too. It's so fun.
And you really, I don't want to repeat myself, but you just beat the hell out of me. But, you know,
it made it even funnier. And Farley loves that. Hit me harder, Michael.
Right? There's no harder.
Yeah. Which, you know, could be examined. I shrink some
and,
sure.
And that was like a Three Stooges sketch in the sense you're coming out. What's going on? What the hell's going on here? You know, and then you just beat the shit out of Farley. Go back
every
in the room. Then
the
you come in the
off,
in
the
G string with the leopard G string. What the hell's going on here?
It's called Bobby Watches Grandma on YouTube.
Yeah, it's
Michael. That... Thank you. You're a stud, and look for both movies. And Beetlejuice, of course, in September.
Yeah, get a meal after. All right, fellas, thank you very much.
We enjoyed it.
See you.
Take care,
buddy.
Michael.
This has been a presentation of Odyssey. Please follow, subscribe, leave a like, a review, all the stuff. Smash that button, whatever it is, wherever you get your podcasts. Fly on the Wall is executive produced by Dana Carvey and David Spade, Jenna Weiss-Berman of Odyssey, Charlie Finan of Brillstein Entertainment, and Heather Santoro. The show's lead producer is Greg Holtzman.